We have to understand that because the ego is a state of intellectual ignorance and numerous illusions and delusions, that one cannot be a neutral observer of one's ego. From within one's ego, because it's a split consciousness, there is always something hidden, something repressed. There is something foreclosed. There is something omitted in the ability to completely make sense of the manifestation of the real, particularly real, what we call here real one, the real of trauma and its effects upon the ego's consciousness. And so this also, by the way, is the failure point of modern science, because modern science is based on the premise that you can be a neutral observer of reality. But in fact, the observer will determine what is observed, even though the cause of what is observed may be subconscious narratives, desires, drives, etc., of the so-called scientific observer. And so in order to observe the ego properly, we have to do it from a higher level, from the soul. And the soul itself is generally out of reach to the postmodern ego because of its structure and its axioms, its unproven premises, having been brought up in a basically atheistic, materialistic, consumeristic, superficial, dumbed-down, collapsing culture that has shed what used to be the core that would hold culture together, which was a shared sense of normativity. And the powers that be have deliberately destroyed that, along with all of the other principles that sustained traditional culture and even early modern culture. So, the ego mind has a very difficult time recognizing its true nature. It requires a somewhat altered state in order to be able to glimpse the fact that the ego itself is an object in your consciousness. It's not your consciousness itself. A mental object, a very complex mental object. So, although the point of the retreat is to get you free of a limiting frame, the first problem we actually have to face is not the frame itself. The problem we are dealing with is that we were nearly all very badly framed. And if you're badly framed, that could mean that the frame is weak and can collapse, or it's not straight and one side may be high and the other low, causing a bipolarity of inflation and deflation, or it can have all kinds of particularities that make it unpleasant to view. And we'll be going over those. So and if you've been badly framed, it's somewhat equivalent to being crucified. And so there's one correspondence to Good Friday right there. Because nearly all of us suffer on the cross of a badly formed frame. The cross even is a frame, but one that is lethal, as are many of the frames that people are stuck in. And yet, because identified with, will not leave. So the first thing we should really get clear about, I think, is what is a frame? What are we actually talking about? So, at the first level, because it's a very complex and deep concept, with a number of levels to it, as we'll see. But at the first level, what we really mean is a self-image, right? That has been framed. This is my image, and it comes with a number of self-concepts, if you will, baggage. But it creates a self-image that is then put on display for the other. This is me. But it's not a real self. It's more like a selfie. Yeah, that's because that's all the ego is. It's a set of self-images, some of which may be inflated and megalomaniac and compensatory to its state of feeling like a loser, an imposter, and a depressed and anxious being who is stuck in a frame that's too small and that may seem ugly or even smelly, even toxic, even poisonous, right? So the frame can keep people from wanting to even see what selfies are put inside of it, or the selfies will reflect the original framing drive that got internalized as the ego's image. And so once you have been framed, your mind is split, your consciousness is split, is probably better to put it that way, between an inside and an outside. Between the selfie and the images of the other selfies in their frames that are on display in the gallery of ego relationality, or the meat market, as you might prefer. So the ego is the object of the other, and the frame puts a limit on the reach of consciousness, and therefore puts limits on your intelligence. As long as you're inside the frame, all of the intelligence of consciousness that didn't fit into that frame is not accessible. Unless it erupts into the frame, either from more trauma or grace, but it's rare that the frame has any contact. The framed intellect has any contact with its larger self. And the frame, therefore, turns you into a local, materialized bodily being from a non-local, formless consciousness that is co-present as the entirety of the morphic field. And so, therefore, the frame keeps you separate from the whole of infinite consciousness, out of which you were framed into the belief that you're a limited individual. But a well-made frame, and even a poorly made one, has some advantages. It protects you from the threat of depersonalization. If the frame were to suddenly break, you would be disoriented. You wouldn't know who you are. There could be a derealization, quote unquote, of what is happening, and suddenly even more delusional narratives would replace the one that you might be in or within the frame. And it keeps you with a certain kind of security of having a fixed identity. I know who I am. I can show you. Here's the frame. Here's my image. So the frame gives you an ability to function within a certain limited set of parameters, but at the expense of freedom, and requiring a replacement of the inherent joy of being unframed with the need for a constant supply of jouissance, which we could call stimulation that produces a momentary thrill of enjoyment followed by, or even concurrent with, suffering, even often preceded by suffering. So a frame, to use the Sanskrit term that the Trika Wisdom School, for example, the Kashmir Shaivite Non-Dual Wisdom Schools, most all of them together, they call the frame a mala. And to get out of the frame, you have to become a nirmala. You have to go beyond whatever frames of reference have seemed like reality. So the frame could also be considered a monad, a monadic structure, or an ego bubble, but bubbles can pop, they're not stable, and they can be extremely fragile. It's a delusion. Yes, it's a limited frame of reference, but one that will not remain valid for very long. And because it creates a fabricated identity, it's not authentic, it's not real, it's not inherent. It's an artificial intelligence, an artificial identity that is an as-if personality. And it will meet challenges that it cannot cope with, because that fixed identity doesn't have it in a repertoire required to deal with events that can shatter the frame. And so the frame itself both renders you with a limited consciousness, but the real price is it creates immeasurable unconsciousness, loss of consciousness, and of the latent potentialities of consciousness, which cannot arise within a small frame. Everybody with me here? Does this make sense to people? Okay. Because you really have to see clearly the situation that you are in if you want to get out of it. And if you want to get out of it in a way that is developmental and cultivates the blossoming of your potentiality, and not a further repression or distortion. So, although we're beginning the conversation and talking about the frame, we will soon discover, as we explore the concept of the frame, that you were put into a frame initially long ago. In fact, for many, the first frame was installed while you were still within a fetal body within the uterus of the one who became your mother. Now, in the old days, the fetus did not become conscious of the world, but remained in a kind of a deep, serene, peaceful sleep. Or the fetus would go into a dreaming state in which, if there was any karma left over from a previous life or from a bardo state between lives, that had to be settled would be resolved in the dream field and could be left behind when one is born, so that one is truly born, newborn. But if you've already been framed, meaning you became prematurely awakened to the fact that your body was stuck helplessly inside a body cavity of your mother, and your mother is in a state of anxiety, or your mother is in a state of her own trauma, or even in a state of anger that she's pregnant, and even considering aborting you, or maybe she's defending you against the father's wanting to abort you, if there is such a being even involved, or she's planning to give you away at birth for adoption, and perhaps does that. Or you're in the womb with a twin, or perhaps even two others or more these days, and either one or the other position of being, I'm going first, I'm getting out of here, I'm going to be the one who is loved, you're the runt, you stay behind, or vice versa. Or there will be an attempted suicide in the womb with the umbilical cord around the throat, attempting to hang yourself, or attempting in some way to prevent the birth which can often require a C-section, than to enable the birth to actually happen, or happen in a way that doesn't kill one or both parties. So the traumatic frame can be there before you actually have language. You have only the vibrational input of the mother and her environment, her umwelt, her situation. And once you're awakened to the fact that you're in a situation that you cannot understand, but in which perhaps the mother and the father are arguing, or one of them is leaving the other, or there is some other trauma, the mother falls, or there is some other accident or difficulty or karmic crash, then the frame will often be with a self-image of one who should never have been born, one who doesn't even deserve to exist, one who actually feels shame for existing and guilt for causing the parents suffering. And possibly a sense of not being able to cope with the energies that have been installed by that saturation with the negative affects of the situation that is outside the sensory capacity or symbolic capacity to be processed. Now, if one is not in that situation, and the mother's very happy that she's pregnant, she's in a state of love and adoration of the to-be-born child, and has all kinds of joyous plans for the child, and there's an extended family support system, etc., etc., and no internal, let's say, sibling rivalry with twins or triplets, or with after the birth an older sibling who didn't want you to be born because you're taking away their love, etc. All of these conditions, including the possibility, of course, that's very likely, that the mother wants a boy or a girl, and you come out not one of those that is wanted. And so your ego becomes not the apple of mama's eye, but more like the black sheep, the scapegoat. And the one whose frame is very tight and unpleasant. So, both before the birth and after the birth, as a helpless newborn clutching to the breast of the mother, if you weren't breastfed and if you didn't get consistent warmth of her body and her voice, her lullabies and your diaper changed at proper times and all of the other care required, but you were neglected, then the frame becomes a very noxious place to be, and you will not be at peace in your own skin. in fact, being badly framed is responsible for most of the somatic skin conditions that people have. We've even spoken about the skin ego before in earlier retreats, I think years ago. But the skin, if you didn't have much love and, let's call it, idealization from the mother and father and the family system, then you'll have a very thin skin. And you may have rashes, and the skin may be inflamed. And you may even tend to cut yourself and to create other problems with the skin. And of course, if you have an extreme instability in your being able to keep a consistent frame, because you got such mixed messages of love one day and neglect the other and brutality and abuse the next, etc., etc., then the frame collapses and it creates a need to secure your body with some extreme means, like getting it tattooed or getting piercings, because the tattoo will show, this is who I am, you see. Now, the proper frame is based on what psychoanalysis calls the ideal ego. It has two concepts in psychoanalysis. At the first assemblage point, if you received enough love and attention and care and freedom from trauma, you would receive the mother's love as a sense that you are ideal. And that sense has to last for a certain amount of time, at least until the weaning. But what if you weren't your mother's ideal? What if, in fact, she demanded that she be your ideal? Then your ego would have to invert itself, and in order to sustain some kind of a separate self-image, it would have to withdraw from a kind of relationality that would create too much risk. And so, for example, if you were brought up to psychotic parents, or what could be called borderline, not only would the projections of the parents of your self-image be somewhat, if not completely, psychotic, but that frame would create an inability to cope with reality at all. And it would bring about a kind of oppositionalism. In order to survive, one would have to compensate the abyss of lack with either a superiority complex or a completely rebellious and oppositional one, or one would reach a point of instability in which one could never overcome the fear of abandonment or the fear of being smothered by the other. Either way, will cause you then later in life not to be able to risk love. Because love is a threat. If you have that kind of a frame, if you really open your heart, what if the love is taken away? It's too risky to lose it again and to face the unbearable lack. Or the other fear could be being taken over by the other and have to serve them, be exploited by them. And so there's a natural hostile dependency that is created in most relationships that a badly framed person has with others. They cannot risk love, so instead they focus on capturing objects of desire. But objects who they will never commit to. And can never be vulnerable with, and can never even allow oneself to be seen with all of the elements in the frame that you have kept subconscious, repressed, or dissociated. And so one's life becomes eventually very bitter. And one will try to compensate that either with the enjoyment of anger and turning one's life into a kind of fight club mentality, sadomasochistic jouissance, will replace love, bullying, and trying to sustain one-upmanship using master signifiers that, like money and power, and one may take up bodybuilding, or one may focus on being an object of desire, which may require one to become anorexic or to adopt some other modality to convince oneself that one is still more attractive than the other with whom one might feel some mimetic rivalry, right? Because once you have a frame that is not workable, you will tend to cover that over with a concentric frame of a larger type that is compensatory and hide the original frame from the other and from oneself. But that original frame is always liable to show up in your consciousness with its unbearable truths. And so one's life tends to become very superficial, and no matter how much jouissance one gets, no matter how much narrative of I've got it made, I'm on top of the world kind of self-presentations with this larger frame, one will be completely dying inside from a lack of libidinal satisfaction. And that's the state that most people are into. How many can relate to that? And so because the nature of the frame today is so unstable and so inauthentic, one has to continue to create new frames around the original frame that'll be based on attempting to gain stature within the larger family system, and then the school system, and then the social system, and to produce new selfies that are more adapted and sufficient to enable one to represent oneself, at least functionally in the world, and ignore the agony and the anxiety, the dread, the terror, and the lostness of the ego at the core of the frame. And so this is the problem that we face.